This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you know you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, unlike the Owls, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So there's only one thing left to say. What's everybody having? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means you'll get some tasty rewards later on. And between you and me, if you order just before kickoff, you can get it just in time for half time, but I've not told you that. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. See you later.
The Wednesday Week. The Sheffield Wednesday Fan Podcast.
So, here we are. Welcome. My apologies to everybody that joined us at 6 o'clock. It's because I can't work the internet and find out what time it is where people are in different parts of the world because I can't do a Google. Apologies if you did join us at 6. What we meant was 7. It wasn't even a typo. I got it wrong. However, welcome to another Lockdown Live. My name's Dan Fudge. We've got Ben, we've got Steve, we've got Simon, Ash and Vic. And join us tonight, as you can see there, in his rather beautiful back garden, it's Mr. Chris Williams, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey.
Yes. Yes, hey, Chris. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I appreciate that your time is short. Now, Chris, I'm going to jump straight into it. Everything I read, it says you were born in Sierra Leone. When was it you came over to the UK?
Around about I was 4 years old.
Wow. Right. So, yep. So being from there and then coming over at such a young age, you must have been quite impressed. I believe you probably went to London playing for Leighton Orient, I assume, yeah?
Yes, correct. Yep.
So when you got to Yorkshire at such a young age, you must have thought, you know, from such a multicultural area as London, to get to Yorkshire, and you must have gone, I can't even understand what these guys are saying, right?
Correct. So I'll try and give you the best. So it happened, it started when we played Sheffield Wednesday in the League Cup, in the doubleheader game. We played at Orient first, lost, and then we went up to Sheffield. The thing I'm going to say is the club did a beautiful job of selling me in those two games. I didn't understand it at the time. I was wondering why, you know, Pete Houston and Frank Clark were having the players play through me in midfield when, at the time at Leighton Orient, we were a very direct team. Even though the youth team were a very possession-orientated team. So it must have been, I think I played, it must have been like a week later, I got a call at home from Peter Eustace, which had never happened to have a call from a coach from Orient, ever. And he's saying, hey, Chris, did you like Sheffield? I was like, yeah, I loved it. Would you like to play there? Would love to. He goes, good, because we would like to sell you to Sheffield Wednesday. And I'm like, whoa, all right. Can we speak to your mum? Sure. So I give the phone to my mum. I go into my room. I'm packing. This is, if I remember right, this is about 10, 11 o'clock at night. I am packing. And my mum's talking to Peter Eustace on the phone. I can't hear what they're saying, apart from the last part, which was, I guess he wants to go because he's in his room packing. So at 6 a.m., I was picked up, never to return home again. So my mum didn't even have time to adjust. I literally packed, went to bed, kissed her goodbye, and my brother said goodbye in the morning, and I was gone, driven to Sheffield. And then the hammer dropped. This is Yorkshire. This is not London. What are they saying? So that was my introduction to Sheffield.
They move you straight in your room then, Chris, or were you put up with a family at first? Because obviously you were only 16, weren't you?
Yeah, so that was the very last conversation between my agent and Trevor Francis, which was Trevor wanted to put me up in housing, and my agent said, you do not need to do that with him. He can take care of himself. So I stayed, I think, in a hotel for over a year till I got my license and I could rent a property. Wow. And I was basically playing and going back and forth in the hotel. Players were picking me up, dropping me off. I mean, I was really looked after. I really loved. I think there's an occasion where some of the ground staff took me home after a game because I finished training the first time. I was like, where's the bus to go home? And they were like, they just laughed at me. Like, no, you don't get a bus to go back to the hotel. We'll take you. So a lot of things changed because in London, I just took the bus and train to games and practices.
I think that's it. I think when Northerners go down London, we one of the funniest things that we find is that when people get the mug on, that they've got to wait 4 minutes for a bus. You know what I mean? And we're like, 4 minutes? You've clearly not stood in a field for 45 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? Now, join us tonight, Chris. He's Steve. You're a bit of a hero of his, so I'm going to embarrass him and pass over to him. And I'll get him to ask you some questions.
Absolutely.
How you doing, Chris? You all right, mate?
Wonderful, thank you. How you doing, Steve?
Yeah, good, thank you. Obviously, we've talked about you coming up, and I'd like to sort of get your first impressions on, you know, coming to the club and, you know, Trevor Francis signing you, those first experiences of getting into the club and what was happening there.
The first time I walked into the dressing room, the first morning, I was brought in, and I was sat next to, between Nigel Jensen and Viv Anderson. And Viv Anderson went after me right off the bat. I mean, he abused my dress code. Nigel Jensen didn't help. And that was my introduction. And then obviously meeting the rest of the players was a wonderful thing. But the thing I knew I was had to be aware of was I had to perform right off the bat. You just cannot walk into that dressing room at that age and not perform, because it was a very star-studded dressing room, to say the least. So my first few training sessions were very important, that I just got acclimated into the football straight away. I didn't have time to be nervous. Only later I reflect, looking back, going, I should have been more nervous, but the players were really welcoming and they educated me in a lot of different ways that maybe a lot of young players might not necessarily have access to, that their experience, the do's and don'ts. Understand that I'm going to make mistakes, but I was held accountable and my age wasn't an excuse.
Yeah.
If I made a mistake, it was simply because I made a mistake. So it was welcoming, but also I had to understand there was a standard. And yeah. By accepting that standard and responsibility, it made my life with those guys, I felt a lot easier.
And the culture at the club at that point was obviously one where we, you know, we're in that sort of transitional period. It was almost,
correct,
many of us, like the heyday of the promotions, the, you know, the finishing third, getting to two finals in 93, finishing seventh in that year as well. Sure. There's some real talented players there, you know. Was there a feeling around the club at that time that we were onto the, you know, on the verge of something really, really major?
I would say, if I reminisce, the feeling in the dressing room was one of excitement and fulfillment, you know, especially in those early days. Getting to two finals was an incredible feat, and I missed the part where I had to go play in the World Youth Cup. So I missed a month, 6 weeks to maybe 2 months. But there was a real competitive edge to each player, and everybody felt that they deserved to play, which is a good thing. I remember one of the pros saying to me, you know, sometimes you have to still buy your time. And I was like, no, it's not about buying my time. It's about me believing that I'm good enough to be in this dressing room with you. If I don't think that, then I won't be in this dressing room. So it's a case of me balancing the act of being a teenager, but also, again, just being accountable. But the atmosphere was wonderful. Especially, I think Ron was the previous manager and Trevor added his own experience to it. Certainly for me as a teenager, I had great help on how to deal with a lot of situation and being in that situation that he put me in.
I mean, don't be shy, Chris. You can name names if you want, but like, you know what I
mean? I look like your friend who was the other Mark Brighty. I mean, what's she saying? What's that about?
Obviously, I've got a question if you don't mind. I Chris, sure. Dash. Obviously, Steve mentioned there about the cup final and the two cup finals, 93. Having been signed by Trevor, were you a little bit disappointed not to make the starting lineup for the final? I know you came on, but for all of us, to start a game for Wednesday would be beyond imaginable, but at Wembley as well, to obviously walk out would be great.
So it was hard for Trevor because, again, I'd come returned back from the Youth World Cup, and if I remember right, the next game that we had was probably the semi-final, yeah. So I didn't play in that, and I didn't get changed in that game, which was really disappointing, but I understood. But not to start in the final, especially when we had three games, and it was kind of obvious that fresh legs were needed, because it was pretty much 22 players going at it. And then you go into extra time. That's, as a coach now, that's what I thought at the time, which was, this needs some fresh legs. And looking at it, especially the Arsenal defense was so stubborn, we needed to score. And I felt that was something that I could contribute to. But at the end of the day, when Trevor made his decision to give me limited time, you have to accept it. But that was one of my that was a disappointment. I just felt that I was in a place where I could have contributed more.
I've heard you talk about, I've heard a couple of interviews where you've talked about the sort of the aftermath and the hangover from losing two cup finals, you know, in the same sort of year. In any way, and I know it was a little bit further on than that, was it in any way one of the contributing factors to getting on? I know you felt like you needed a fresh start and a change. Was it one of the factors that led to that?
I would say yes, if I can be, yeah, I think it was. It wasn't because we lost. It's because there was effects from that loss in the locker room, from my point of view, where it was such a disappointment that it was just hard to move on and for us to reconnect and come together and build. And then I think we lost a couple of players in that off-season, and obviously Addison. But the chemistry going into the year, following year, it just wasn't the same. And then, for me, I had to look at, I'd been there for so long and I was still on the very same contract that I started with. And so, advice I was given by pros was, well, after a year, they should have really given you a contract. After 2 years, they should have probably given you a new contract. After 3 years, they probably should have done this 2 years ago. And then in the final year, it was a case of me going, okay, let me see what the club does. And to me, it was like too little, too late. I felt unwanted and not valued at that stage. And I shouldn't stay somewhere that you don't feel that. Even though the club did try to keep me, it just felt like too little, too late. Like I was an afterthought. And there is no blame. I still love the club. It was a really tough decision, but it was the right one because you want to play for a club because you believe in what they're doing and the direction they're going. But I just felt like I was an afterthought.
So, Chris, obviously Trevor Francis signed you. So, yep. What was he like as a manager for you? Because some of the senior pros, you know, so the stories that we hear, there were some sort of there were tension and stuff, and not everybody got on with him.
I never had any tension with Trevor. I just didn't. I just felt that he was one person that really understood a lot of things I was going through. And he kept a healthy distance and relationship with me as a player. I think it's tough being a player manager in that particular squad.
That's what I would say. You're almost player manager, don't you, until you said that. Yeah.
Because 1 minute he's on the sideline, next minute he's running around with us. And when you're running around with us, you're going to get hurt. I mean, you're going to get tackled, you're going to get kicked. And anybody that doesn't like your decision-making, you're definitely going to get hurt. So that was a balancing act that I watched unfold. And it was hard for him. But for me personally, I could see there was tension because it's normal for players to be disappointed they're not playing. And it's even more disappointing if the manager puts himself in the starting lineup ahead of some of the players.
So Chris, are you saying then that when Trevor was sort of training with you and on the pitch with you, that certain players who probably were at odds with him probably had a bit of a go at Trevor physically when they were playing, just took it out in a tackle or some things along those lines?
No, what I'm saying is there were players who played very physical in training regardless of who was playing.
No, you're being very, very diplomatic.
I'm going to agree with, I will agree with your statement that there's, I guess if there's both players that was upset, yes. But there were some very physical players that they didn't care that Trevor, if Trevor was on the field, you're no longer the manager. And that's it. It was just a fair game. And Trevor understood that. Trevor never complained when he got kicked. I think I remember sometimes one of the players saying, "Hey Trevor, you know," he fell over and he goes, "Stop, this is not the San Siro. Can't roll over and get fouled here. This is Hillsborough." In fact, you know what? It was Richie Barker, assistant manager. He said, "Trevor, it's not the San Siro. It's Hillsborough. So stop running around and get on with the game."
Yes, naming names, CBW. I love naming names. I'm all up for that.
Okay, so I should have said it.
One of the things that I've read about you, Chris, is that obviously Viv Anderson was a huge praise for you everywhere you went. And he actually compared you to Ryan Giggs. Like, that's got to be pretty special. I mean, in my job, I get compared to Sarah in the other department. So it's not quite... So how, obviously you moved into an apartment on your own at 16. You moved to a Premier League club at 16. You managed to live a life and somehow not go completely off the rails or Miley Cyrus style. And then to be compared to Ryan Giggs, how do you keep your head level with stuff like that?
First of all, that's a great compliment, which I didn't realise. But Viv was just amazing in the sense of he just held me accountable. He held me accountable and did not waver from that.
Treat you like an equal. Did he treat you like an equal, even though you were a lot younger and inexperienced? Yeah.
And I think I had to earn it. And that's why I say in my early training sessions and performances, you have to perform. And you can't use your age as an excuse to not perform or make mistakes. That was just not how I was treated. And it was a hard knock dressing room. I mean, go for it. You've got Nigel Pearson, Viv Anderson, John Hart, Sheridan, Bridie Hursty, Danny Wilson. I mean, these are no-nonsense pros who have a lot of experience and accountability and skill. And so to win those guys over says a lot. But it's what's funny about Ryan Giggs is that we played against each other he played for Wales, I played for England. And it was probably about 2 months earlier, maybe 3 months earlier. I can't remember the length of time. But we actually got into it during the game. And the game was in Wales at Wrexham, I believe. And we got into it during the game. And then the game ended. And we played Manchester United. And we're in a tunnel. And we went outside the dressing room. And Man United players came out, and who's next to me? Ryan Giggs. We both looked at each other. We pointed we recognised each other and all right, let's let it go. And so then we went out and played. But he was a phenomenal player. And it's ironic that Viv compared me to him because Ryan just had a competitive edge that was unmatched and completely deserved the success that he had.
Simon, have you got one?
Well, I was going to say to you, because you look at where you came from, Leighton Orient, and into a squad of what effectively were superstars at the day compared to a young lad who was 16. When you first arrived at Hillsborough and you went into that changing room and you met those sort of people, what was the first thing that went through your mind as a 16-year-old lad from London coming up to Sheffield, which, you know, even now is a completely different city to London? You walked into... Sure. A changing room full of what were at that time superstars. What was the first thing you went through your head, Chris? Because I know my head would have just gone bang. You know? What were you, a level-headed lad, or were you just starstruck at first? I mean, your talent was superb. Watching on pitch was superb. But what did you think?
I think my upbringing came through, and I mean, my mum and certainly the coaches at Orient. I was grounded. It was a case of, okay, here it is, and this is what you got to do. It was just do your job. I didn't have time to be emotional until probably it was 2 months later when Trevor dropped me from the starting 11, and I was really pissed. and Frank, our reserve team manager, pulled me aside and went, "Hey, teenager, you've just played something like 12, 15 games. Your body and mind are tired. You need to come to the reserves, regroup, and then go back." And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's true. Okay, got it." So I had that support system around me, not only at Hillsborough, but at Orient. But at Orient, what they did was, when we were 13, they had us as U14 playing against semi-pros for 2 years. So playing against men was something I was really comfortable with when they put me in with the senior team. So by the time I got to Hillsborough, it was like, I'm just playing against guys again, because we were trained to play against semi-pros, and we were getting ourselves smashed 10-0, 12-0. But Orient had a development model that was about getting us acclimated to playing against grown men. So to walk into that dressing room, I didn't see them as superstars until later on, because I was focused on just performing.
Yeah,
which is probably the right thing to do, because if I got distracted in any other way, I may have had a different result.
Wow.
On the back of Simon's question about what did you think, I asked this of a lot of players that first time. I mean, you came from Brisbane Road, I think it was known back in
yes.
Opal Fruit days. To compare that moment must have been huge for you. But then to walk out of the pitch at Hillsborough when we were having a really rich time of it, when it was going really well, I mean, that must be a hell of a moment, right?
It was, especially the fact that we're playing my first game was Arsenal. So I watched the Sheffield Derby the week before, and I was in the stands with the Wednesday fans, and that was an amazing experience. I mean, the singing, the chanting, the wisecracks, even though some of it I couldn't understand. It was just amazing. It was a great place to start, to watch the pre-game ritual with the players and then go up to the stands and get accustomed to the fans. That's the one thing that stood out, which was, you can't come here and mess around. Because the fans were very passionate, very serious, which was obviously different to Orient, no disrespect. So that was certainly had an impact. But when I came out against Arsenal, and the Arsenal players, because I was from London, said, "You know, good luck, make sure you..." And Aneri Wright said, "Hey, listen, and Paul Merson, enjoy this." That resonated me after the game, where it suddenly, I was sat down in my corner going, "Holy shit, I just played Arsenal's first team." That's when that kind of sunk in. And then from there, I just kind of refocused to kind of get on my job. But it was something that I realized at a moment was, this was huge. And for Trevor to have put me in that lineup at that stage was about trust. So I felt obligated to make sure that I tried to always perform, because someone to do that at that age in that game is pretty, shows a lot of confidence and trust in a teenager.
It upsets me just how young you are, to be honest, Chris. When I was researching and noticed you were only 4 years older than me, and I used to watch you when I was 12, just pisses me off, if I'm honest. Like, you know what I mean? Sorry, Ben, I cut you off then.
I've got a question.
Go on, Ash.
I know it's a probably question, but what one thing stands out for you at your time at Sheffield Wednesday? Is there one thing? Is it making your debut like you think? Or is there anything different that we might not know that you just thought that really sticks in my mind for Sheffield Wednesday?
I think there's two sides to that. There's the negative side and the positive side. So the worst moment, I think, wasn't the losing the finals. That wasn't it. It was when Sheffield United beat us at home and they thumped us. That hurt. One hurt. And the amazing thing was, the next day we had training, and I think it was Des Walker said, "You've got to put that in the trash and put that down to just a bad freak performance, because you can't use that loss to have a sucky season." And that was a big thing to say, because I think it could have gone really downwards from there. But thankfully, it didn't. And we could have maybe even got relegated if we had not got our heads together. So that one was, that hurt against losing to them. The Leeds one was painful, but that, losing Sheffield United at home, that hurt the most. Positives, I think the positive time for me was the week of the FA Cup. I know the games, we know we lost, but just the build-up, the anticipation, the interaction with the fans, the whole club, from the kit man, the clean ladies, the Annie, our dinner lady who fed us and gave us coffee every day. It was just a wonderful week. And that's what I remember as a kid, thinking about how do you prepare for... We used to watch the FA Cup when we were kids, a match of the day. And you think, how do they prepare for this game? Well, I got to see that up close and personal, and it's just an amazing build-up. You know, family wanting tickets, friends wanting tickets, the whole build-up. And then to walk up that tunnel, looking back in history and how many players have done that, and come out to that sensational sound was memorable. And to be in a Wednesday shirt at that moment was something really special.
That list of players is not going to get any longer, is it? I mean, obviously, because you kind of judge old Wembley and new Wembley, don't you? So you came out of Wembley, and that list of players isn't going to get any bigger. You know, you're in some alumni there, Chris. You know what I mean? But yes. Sorry, Ben, I cut you off earlier. My apologies. Right.
No, just while we're about special moments, what were it like playing in Europe?
Man, what a change in atmosphere, especially the home games that we had. It was amazing. It's hard to put put it into words, but the tempo of the game is faster than the Premier League games. It's just, you're playing against even quality competition, but the buzz of the fans in the stadium was just electrifying. It was different. There's a different feel from Premier League games, especially derby games, to FA Cup games. Like FA Cup games, there's a wonderful buzz in the atmosphere, but for Europe, it was magnificent. It really was, and it's just something that I wish we had more of an opportunity to have had on my time on Wednesday.
That's I can tell you what that buzz is actually, Chris, because at the European games they don't serve beer at the stadium, so everybody's pretty tanked up, like, you know, by the time they only get.
I'm going to go a bit further, which is Yorkshire definitely opened my eyes to the social elements.
You're not saying you was a member of a Tuesday club or anything like that.
this is something I wanted to get onto. This
people of Sheffield are professionals. They're socialising.
Cheers, Chris.
Yeah, I'll,
Don't know what you mean.
I'm going to plug in. Yeah.
No, I wanted to get onto this because there were a couple of stories I've heard from, like, on different podcasts, from lads at Forest. Because we've had Mark Crossley on that you'll have played with, of course, and I've listened to a couple of different ones. That I think, is it Alan Rogers?
Alan Rogers, yep.
And I think it was him that mentioned that on nights out you were always just the one in charge of the kitty because you never had a drink.
I kind of had a double standard, just so we're clear. So during my English career, no, I didn't touch that. I was always Coke, pineapple, lemonade. I held the kitty, and I was the one to make sure certain boys got home to their wives. Because if I wasn't going out, they weren't allowed to go out.
Start naming names, Chris Clark Williams! I need you to start naming names!
I'll put it in my book.
by the book.
Hilarious. Like, is Chris going out? Okay, you can go out, because at least I know you're going to go home.
if we just start saying names, and what's the reaction? Just throw names.
Sorry, I'm just Googling. I'm on Amazon now. Chris Park Williams book.
It certainly wasn't Alan Rogers, I'll say that much. But but when we went abroad to Italy, when I went to Italy for treatment, you had to have a glass of wine. You couldn't say no because it's part of their culture. So even though I didn't like it, I would have sips of wine, which I felt was disgusting at the time. So that was my double standard. When I was abroad, I did have a glass, but when I was at home, I just didn't drink until I retired.
Is that why you chose her abroad? Is that why you went to Cyprus?
I went to Cyprus because I needed a tan, number one. Suntan was number one. Two, they absolutely wooed me, which was not hard to do, apparently. I just wanted to play abroad. I had an opportunity, and David Platt, we just wouldn't let me go to play in Italy, even though a couple of teams came in for me. He says, Chris, there's no way I can let you go. Just, no. So I wanted to experience the difference in Cyprus. And there is a there's a distinct difference. Training environments, the fact they train at 7 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock at night, which, you know, was just weird to say the least.
Bloody hot, yeah.
The humidity all day, having to stay out in the sun and having siestas. It was just a wonderful experience. And then to add that to, I just wanted to add that to my list of accomplishments, just getting abroad and having a taste of that. It was good for me. And I think for a lot of English players, they need to sample that because you get coached differently as well in a different manner. We have wonderful English coaches, but to be around some of the international coaches is a great experience. And I had a wonderful coach at Apoel.
Do you feel there's a snobbery with British coaches that we kind of look down on everybody else's game?
Yeah, we're British. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. I'm just a bit conscious of time. That's all. How long have we got? There's 10 minutes.
I can give you 10 minutes. That's fine.
Okay. No problem. Right. So, I need to ask you this because it was something that John Newsom picked up on when we spoke to him. Now, you I think you guys missed each other a little bit at Sheffield Wednesday,
yep.
But you have both played at different points of your career for Ron Atkinson.
Yep.
And the reason Simon asked the question he did before was about a story that he told us about that Ron Atkinson was a bit of a, let's call him abrasive, and didn't really endear himself to the players a lot of the time. And you played with him with your time at Forest as he tried to save you to stop going down that year. And he told us a story at the end of training. As you probably do now with your coach, you play a small sided game, and the players used this opportunity to kick 10 bells of shit out of Ron Atkinson. Did you ever have a bite of that cherry, or did some of the other lads have a bite of that cherry? You know what I mean? Because I need to know about it.
So here we go. My time with Ron.
Where's my popcorn? Where's my bloody popcorn?
So my time with Ron is different to most. So I, when he arrived, he put me to the pastures in the reserves. Mm-hmm. So I did not get, you know, his first game was, I think we had Man U, Arsenal, and I was on the bench for that game. After that, for four months, I was with the reserves. Like, he just sent me to banishment. And it wasn't till we went to Aston Villa away in March or April, he brought me back into the team, played me for half an hour. And after that game at Aston Villa, he laid into me. I played 20 minutes. You would have thought I'd played the whole game. We were relegated that day. And it was a moment where he was yelling at me, and I stood up. And I'm going to tell this story. Sorry, Ron, you have to suck it up. Too bad. I stood up and went, are you fucking kidding me? I played 20 minutes. You put me out in banishment for 4 months, and this game is on me? I stood up, took my clothes off, walked past him, went in the showers.
Ended at some point. I thought
I
stood up, took my clothes off.
That's it. Sashayed out there, ass naked.
That's the short version. But I had to say to him, no. And then what he said to me after was, right, everybody's going to be training tomorrow morning. Nobody's going to the PFA Awards. And I was like, that doesn't bother me because that's not going to help me to train tomorrow morning. I'm in the reserves. Are you kidding me? So we trained, and then here's where it became fun. Somebody got injured, and then he put me in the starting lineup. So, sorry, let me go back. On the Monday, this is Saturday, so we trained Sunday. On the Monday, we had a reserve game at Leicester away. And what Ron didn't know was I knew he was going to turn up for that game to judge me. The first time he ever came to watch me was at the reserves at Leicester. So I told those boys, we are going to perform tonight because this guy is not going to win this battle with me. So we went out. We had a tremendous first half. I can't remember. I don't know where we won. We didn't lose, but whatever. He comes at halftime, and it's the one time where you've got to give Ron credit. He went, you know what, Bart Williams, that was a good first half. I went, thanks, Ron. After that game, we're back in the team.
Wow.
And that's when we went on that stupid run where we won all the games to the end of the season, even though we'd been relegated.
Yeah.
And after the season, he turned to me and went, why did you play like that earlier? And I said, Ron, you were watching Man United in Champions League. Your assistant coach despises me. hello, I'm playing the reserves in Mansfield, and nobody's there watching, apparently. And so what you should have known that I knew, which was, I'm a poor man's Roy Keane when Frank Clark brought me here, that this team doesn't perform unless you have a similar player to my skill set. It's Forest. But you should know that because you've coached big-time teams. And he was like, and he was apologetic, but he wasn't wrong, but he was wrong, if that makes sense. Coaches make mistakes. Like, I've learned that as a coach. Players make mistakes. But the ones I'll give him credit for, Ron, he owned it. He owned it. You know, he owned it. So I didn't get to participate on his plane because I was ousted.
So if he'd have played you, they'd have stayed up, basically, yeah?
No. Just quicker.
Okay, does anybody else have any last question before?
Well, I've got one really big one.
Go on.
Sorry.
I have a question, Chris.
Sorry, my dog ran off to... Go ahead, sorry.
I've had three people ask me this question, and it is one that I wanted to ask you myself. Sure. So, what were you listening to on bench with those massive headphones on?
Oh, yeah. So, I had a diverse set of...
You like Ness and Dormer or something.
I was listening to A, Shabba Ranks, a bit of Public Enemy. what else I was listening to? Not R. Kelly. Yeah, it's mostly hip-hop and R&B at the time.
Your nickname was Shabba, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what, yeah. So the funny thing is, that was my way of watching the game and enjoying myself. It's the FA Cup. Like, so Trevor wasn't even mad at me because he realised I didn't do anything to be disrespectful to him. It was a case of, I really enjoyed, like I said, the week leading up to this, I had two choices, moan and mope around and be miserable behind the bench, or say, you know what, I'm not playing, but I'm going to make this a joyous day. I went with the joyous day. So yeah. For those who are offended, too bad. I had a great time.
Looks not clear.
If you look now, Chris, every player's got a set of cans on. They go to a match and they've all got heads. So you set a trend, mate. You set a trend.
They just didn't know. I should have. What else you got for me?
Well, Vic's going to take you out with some quick-fire questions. She's going to fire them at you, quick as you can, Chris, and then we'll wrap it up for you, brother, because I know you've got, you know, it's the middle of the day there. You know, you've probably got dinner to get to or something like that.
It's got work.
I'm actually coaching some very talented players this afternoon, though, aren't we?
Oh.
Okay. go ahead.
Who do you still speak to that you were with at Wednesday?
Oh, my God. The last person I spoke to was John Hawks. I saw John Hawks. Paul Williams is over here. Who else? Yeah, because John Hawks and Paul Williams are over here in the States.
Yeah, cool. Okay, who was the best player you've ever played with?
Oh, you're killing me.
If you say Alan Rogers or Steve Stone, I'm going to get a bit pissed off with you, Chris.
I'm going to say Chrissy Waddle.
Yeah.
Obs.
Yeah. It's hard to know. It's hard.
Now, obviously, that was hard. I've read that you do still follow us now. So, if you're looking at the team that we've got now, who do you think you would have liked to have played alongside?
Oh, you know what? You can't ask me that question.
Yeah. Wait, everyone else says Stephen Fletcher. So, I mean, just fill it in.
I'm going to go. Obama.
That's who I'm going to go with.
Who was the class clown?
You know what? That was between three people. Viv, John Hawks, and Nigel Jimson, even though he had the dry sense of humour for some reason.
Who was the worst dressed?
Phil Anderson! He dressed like a white boy. I'm sorry. He dressed like a white boy. No doubt.
Wednesday.
No. Sorry?
Do you have any regrets about your time at Sheffield Wednesday?
Oh, hell no. No. Absolutely not. No.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Amazing. My pleasure.
Chris, we're gonna let you go to work now. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I know Vic's in love with you now, and I think I'm a bit gay for you as well. So,
Oh, me too. I think we've got plenty of men crushes going on there.
It was okay, my pleasure. Mark. Thanks for having me.
Okay, big round of applause. Thanks a lot. Chris Matt Williams.
Cheers, Chris. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Chris Matt, thank you.
Brilliant.
Check this, don't I? That would be right embarrassing, wouldn't it? Because I have literally broke many a speed limit today to get back from Bristol. So wait. Chris is available at 2 p.m. EDT. Now, when I Googled it, that meant 6 p.m. our time.
Oh,
no, 7.
Is it 7?
Yeah.
100% 7.
For fuck's sake, Rob!
Is it really? I thought it was 6 hours.
Well, 6 hours would be 8 o'clock, dickhead.
Well, here, no, look, there you are. So, 13:02, Western, Eastern time is the same. Wait, no, on EDT. Yeah,
now it's saying it's 13:02.
Yeah, yeah, innit? Wait. 8 p.m. EDT.
By the time we're back on.
Let me just get this photo.
What time is it in
EDT? What time is it there?
Where he lives? Because last
it's
week.
1 p.m. EDT at the moment. Yeah.
Daniel,
oh, right, so it's right.
You yeah. are. No, we've got another hour.
You told him 2 p.m.
2 p.m. EDT. Yeah.
And it's now 1 p.m. EDT.
I won't be a minute.
Which means 6.
Then you can be an hour. Yeah.
Wait, what's that?
Dan, you're wrong, man.
Can I go home?
I Google it up against GMT, and then it's got... Right, let me show you what I'm looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, but we're not GMT at the moment. We're an hour ahead.
Hour ahead.
BST.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you're recording this. I'm so glad you're recording this.
You're fucking winding me up or what?
No! We get, but hours go forward a bit, so now we're on British summertime, BST, which
I'm
is
I'm going to get more off on Twitter hard here now, aren't I? If anybody's celebrating.
Oh. It's bad enough. I told everyone it was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Now, it's been now we're delayed an hour. It's not 6 p.m. here. So right, I've got...
Fuck's sake.
GMT. Are we on we BST then right now,
BST,
are we?
Yeah, British summertime.
How old are you, Dan? Did you...
I just thought we were always on GMT. Like, you know.
Oh, God.
And Simon stayed around for work for this, Annie. I have fucked everybody's life up, Anna.
Why don't you email?
The Wednesday Week. The Sheffield Wednesday Fan Podcast.
It's the 90th minute. You've got all your mates round. You've got your McNugget share boxes coming down the left wing ready to go. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points back of the net. Le Bosch. Automatic delivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com for more information. See you later.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.